This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, December 6th. I'm Angela Denning. Petersburg officials are cautioning the public to lock up vehicles, possessions, and property after reports of stolen items around the community. Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht told Assembly Monday that police have had, quote, quite a few reports of thefts over the past few weekends. Giesbrecht encouraged people to report the crimes as soon as possible.
The biggest challenge for the police department is that many of these reports are coming in well after the fact, basically out of people's homes, warehouses, boats, and things where they can't basically tell us when something was stolen. So in many cases, it was several months before they last noticed or checked something. So we are encouraging people to keep a closer eye on their stuff, unfortunately. More timely reporting actually helps us to keep stuff from leaving the island and becoming unrecoverable. So, again, unfortunate, but keep your eye on your stuff, and we'll continue the process of trying to find who's responsible.
Police Chief Kelly Swihart says his department has had some reported thefts and burglaries and also noticed some crimes reported on local public Facebook groups. He says police are actively investigating and hope to resolve those cases soon. Black, billowing smoke rose from a wooded area near Wrangell Avenue this morning at around 8:30. Petersburg Fire Department responded to a fire there where a two-story building was in flames. It was located back in the woods behind a home at 1312 North Nordic Drive. I spoke with Dave Berg with the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department by cell phone while he was still at the scene.
About 8:30 this morning, we had a report of a structure on fire behind a house on the 1300 block of North Nordic Drive. We immediately dispatched the fire crews. We brought two engines and the ambulance, and about 15 firefighters showed up on the scene. We found a single-family structure, approximately 30 foot by 30 foot, two stories, and the fire was deeply set in the crawlspace basement of the structure when we got here. We were able to get initial attack lines, large diameter attack line off of one of the trucks to the side of the structure, and started to extinguish flames in the basement area. It seems to be where the fire started. It had extended up the walls and into the attic area. Not too much damage on the main floor, but the attic was pretty well engulfed, also on an extension. So once the second engine arrived, we were able to get water from a second source and brought a large diameter hose off of that engine and branched it off into 2-inch and 3/4 lines, which allowed us to go inside and attack from the inside attic access to completely extinguish the flames.
So was this a home? Were people living in there?
This was formerly a home. It had power to it. There was a small amount of heat on. But the home was not occupied. It was being used for storage.
Okay.
Fortunately, we found that out right away, and that there was no danger of anyone trapped.
Okay, so there were no injuries, but it sounds like the building had a lot of damage.
Yeah, there's a significant amount of damage in the building, and I suspect that it's pretty much of a total loss. It's an older structure, probably built in the 1920s. As one of the original structures out here on North Nordic, set back into the woods, probably 150 yards from the street, an older structure that was just used for storage by the families that owned it.
Was there any threat of the fire spreading?
No. There's no structures around it. We had an oil tank and some propane that we were a little concerned about. We were able to keep those wet and impending fire off of those. The only other damage around the area could have been to some trees. There are some power lines that run in the back of the building, high-tension power lines that run off of Wrangell Avenue over to Sandy Beach Road. But the fire was contained to the building and didn't get too much above the roof line.
Okay, are you still on the scene?
Yes, we still have two trucks on the scene. We still have water flowing, putting out some hot spots, but we're just about ready to wrap it up.
Wow, so you've been working on that for about 3 hours.
Yes, we don't want to take the chance of a building like this having a second call on it because of a rekindling, and so we want to make sure that all the hot spots are out. But we're just about ready to pick up and head back to the hall and everybody's respective jobs.
Dave Berg is the spokesperson for the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department. No word yet on the cause of the fire. The Alaska Department of Transportation has said no to Petersburg's request for taking over two remote state-owned docks, but could come back with another offer in the future. The municipality is waiting to make another decision on the issue. Joe Vicnicki has more.
A December 5th letter from the DOT's State Ports and Harbors Engineer, Michael Luxion, says the state is unable to meet terms and conditions of transfer requested by the Petersburg Borough. The state has offered three docks, one at Entrance Island in Hobart Bay on the mainland, one at Papke's Landing on Mitkoff Island about 10 miles south of Petersburg, and one in Kuprinoff directly across the Wrangell Narrows. The state's offer included $732,000 to do maintenance work on the floats. In November, Petersburg's assembly decided to decline the dock at Entrance Island, but agreed to accept the other two docks if the state paid $1.2 million for maintenance work. Petersburg Mayor Mark Jensen discussed the December 5th letter with the borough assembly and said he also had a chance to speak with the state official.
I think Mr. Luchin was kind of surprised when we asked for $1.2 million. I said, well, that's just what the assembly feels we need if we're going to take these facilities over and be responsible for them. And in that conversation, he said, well, there's money in the fund or in their coffers or whatever you want to call it, but they just have to give us more money, they have to take it from someone else.
The state's letter notes that the borough's request is more than the state offered. Luxion also questions the borough's plan to transfer the Kuprinoff dock to that city and says removing Entrance Island from the deal will mean a reduction in the money the state will pay. DOT spokesman Jeremy Woodrow clarified that the letter is rejecting the offer from the borough. However, he says the original offer from the state is still on the table through the end of this month.
And the borough has the option to accept that offer. If they don't, that doesn't mean that this work in progress is over. It means that the state and the borough can still revisit this issue and try to come to an agreement in the future. Just obviously, right now, the state and the borough have different goals in mind, and we can't reach an agreement, but we still are working toward that.
Assembly member Bob Lynn suggested thinking about the issue some more and waiting until the next meeting to make a decision. The state offered the Kuprinoff dock to that city back in 2010, pending legislative approval that never came. Kuprinoff Mayor Tom Reinartz says his city is still interested in taking over that dock, and he thinks the transfer of both facilities needs to happen.
I understand the challenges to take Papke's Landing, but the borough has a responsibility. They took on, the city of Petersburg took on the responsibility of a borough, and that means they have to take care of needs of the borough. They can't continue to focus on Service Area 1.
Service Area 1 is the old city limits of Petersburg. Both docks are outside of that area and are used by visitors along with residents and boaters from both inside and outside the old city limits. Petersburg's assembly is concerned with the condition of the floats and the money needed to bring the facilities to a good condition. A consultant for the borough figured both floats needed to be replaced for a combined price tag of $2.5 million. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
For over a decade, there was no place to check out a book and cake. Tucked into a pocket of Kuprinoff Island, the Cake School District closed the library in 1999 due to funding loss. But through outside partnerships and the hard labor of volunteers, the books were put back on the shelves and the library reopened 1 year ago. Emily Kwong visited the stacks and has this story.
Ooh, Heroes of the Frontier. Dave Tigers. Yeah, look, these are really great.
Christmas has come early for Jocelyn McKinnon Crowley. She's unpacking a cardboard box filled to the brim with hardcovers donated by a couple in Juneau. On top is a note.
It says, best wishes on the reopening of your library. And it's on sunflower paper.
Anything to spruce up the space is exciting for her. In the Shirley Jackson Community Library, named after a famed local teacher, there are beanbags, potted plants, and 6 computers at orderly attention beneath a sign that says, "Light up your imagination and read." The only thing out of date are the books. A good portion of the collection is pre-1999, when the library closed. And there are a lot of duplicates and classroom sets, like 20 copies of C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
We also recently removed about 1,500 books that were all pre-1960 kids' books that were falling apart.
So, McKinnon Crowley, a volunteer with AmeriCorps Vista, began seeking donations of gently used books, especially those geared toward kids and about Alaska. This is the 7th box to arrive. She unpacks it with relish, not bothering to shush the visiting student athletes in the corner. While the library is operated and paid for by the school district, it's open to the public.
Watching the kids have an opportunity, hey, I can actually have a place to go learn and use, it's a great thing.
Kevin Shipley is the superintendent and principal of Cakes Schools. As he tells it, the resurrection of the library kind of mirrors the history of Cake. In the 1990s, Cake's economy, built on logging and fishing, collapsed from what Shipley calls a perfect storm of factors.
You had the feds put your regulations on logging, you had change in the fishing program, and then you had prices of fuel go up.
School enrollment dropped as families left, which cut funding. And the library was one of the casualties.
You cut the fat first, then you cut muscle, and you get down into the bone. So we are bare bones here.
When Shipley arrived in 2012, most of the collection was packed in boxes. But that year, the school had a lucky break. Enrollment was 101, and that extra student qualified them for more money through the state's per-pupil funding formula.
One student makes a big difference. It's basically $300,000 difference.
With the extra cash, Shipley hired a principal, Evelyn Wilburn, who, alongside community member Marcia Ward, got the library back on its feet. The one-year anniversary of the reopening was in October. Over fish spread and pumpkin bread, the library gave out books for free. But there's a new problem now. With new books coming in, what happens to the old books? I'm in the car of the high school's English teacher, Jory Grant. She and McKinnon Crowley, the Vista volunteer, are roommates. We turned down one of Cake's old logging roads. Our destination is the town dump.
About, like, what do we do about all of these extra books that are in such bad condition? Or, you know, books that are like the current Soviet Union, and you're just like, well, that's a little out of date.
To keep the black bears away, Grant cranks Billy Joel music. Barging trash off the island is too expensive, so effectively every book that comes into Cake has to stay or be set on fire in the town dump. Grant says this has been a bit of a sore spot as the library tosses outdated books, a process known as weeding.
We put books out here before the box broke open and people were like, they're throwing away the books! But we were like, guys, these are really bad old books. We can't afford to send them to other places. So, like, what else are we going to do with them? But it's still just so ingrained, like, don't burn books, that everyone was, like, very against it.
We pile back in the car. For the record, tonight they're just taking out their apartment trash. But the problem they're talking about is a big one. I understand where those critics are coming from. It's not easy to watch even old books burn. But McKinnon Crowley reminds me that libraries aren't archives. They have to change with the times. Right now, the library sees about 40 visitors per week. And the best way to get that number up is by giving readers the books they're looking for. Reporting in Cake, I'm Emily Kwong.
And to see some pictures of the library and directions for donating books, you can visit our website, kfsk.org. Petersburg High School volleyball took second place at the Region 5 2A tournament in Craig last weekend. PHS lost in 5 games to Craig Friday morning, beat Wrangell in 4 games later that day, and then lost to Craig a second time that evening. The Panthers took first in the region with those wins. Both teams, Craig and Petersburg, head to the state tournament in Anchorage this week. Joe Vicknicki spoke with Coach Jamie Cabral about his team's play in Craig.
I know the girls really wanted to get the first place and get repeat as champions, but could not have asked for a better performance from the girls this past weekend. Going into the first semifinal match to get in the championship game, and we went five sets. We won the first 25-14 pretty handily. The second game we got behind early and lost 25-18. Then lost game 3/25/18 again. Our first contacts kind of went south, and we needed to find our rhythm again with our first passing so we could actually run an offense. And then game four kind of came out a little bit stronger, did well, won that one 25-18 again, and then went to game five in that first semifinal match and went back and forth with them. We were down 5-1, tied it up 5-5, and then we were down 12-5 in that fifth match and came all the way back to fight back, but ended up losing 15-13 in the fifth game. And then we had to bounce back, play Wrangell to get back into the championship game, and handled Wrangell well in four sets. And they came out pretty fiery the second game and beat us and took one set off of us. And then headed to the championship game, and our girls were working hard, really, really tired by the time we got to that game, and pulled it off, and we won in four. So we forced the if game of one set to 30, and played well in that one. Went 25-25, we were tied, and just went back and forth, 26-26, 27-27. You could tell a little bit of fatigue started to hit us. We were missing our serves. That was our first contact kind of got us on that one, too, and ended up losing 30-27 in the if game. But couldn't have asked for a better effort from the kids, and fought through the fatigue, the soreness of it all, but just could not have been happier with a loss, so to speak.
That's a lot of volleyball for one day.
Yeah, for one day. Started at 11:45, and we got off the court at 9:30. So it was it was a fabulous performance, one of the best performances that I've ever been a part of coaching, and this team just fought to the bitter end. So that was kind of cool to see them do that.
Anyone get individual honors?
Yes, we had four voted onto the all-conference team. Tanya Spears, junior middle. Courtney Fredrickson, our outside junior. Elisa Larson, our other junior middle. And then Emma Chase repeated as all-conference selection. And then our Good Sport Award winners were Abby Bennett and Martha Johnson. And then our all-academic team was all of our seniors. All of our seniors made the all-academic team. And that was Chandler Strickland, Abby Bennett, Hannah Newman, and Emma Chase.
Okay. Yeah. So your work here is not done, because you get a trip to the state tournament.
Yep, trip to the state tournament. We leave tomorrow already. Probably be home for about 29 hours before we head back out again. And we pulled Susitna Valley, our first game, Thursday at 1:30. And we've seen them last year. That was our first game last year. And they're a very talented team. They are undefeated right now in their conference play and have not I don't think they've lost a three-game match at all this season. So they are the number one seed of the Borealis Conference up there. So we've seen them last year. Very skilled athletic team with some big middles, too. And so it should be interesting. And this year, a little bit different. It's the first year that two-way is going to be a straight-up double elimination tournament. And so even if you lose one, you still can fight back for the state championship. We got a lot of volleyball again ahead of us. And so they're excited. They're excited to get back to the state tournament.
Jamie Cabral is Petersburg High School's volleyball coach. Petersburg opens up the state 2A tournament at Diamond High School in Anchorage Thursday afternoon at 1:30. The high school wrestling team was also in action last weekend. We'll hear how they did coming up tomorrow on KFSK News. And this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.